Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Russia said this week that it has set up a new airbase in a city in northern Syria abandoned by U.S. forces when Turkey invaded last month. That invasion was done by order of the Turkish president, but there's reporting that many of the fighters, both from Turkey and Russia, were actually mercenaries, outside contractors. The U.S. has also relied on mercenaries in Iraq and Afghanistan. And Sean McFate has worked as a private military contractor. He's also a former Army officer. And he writes about the use of contractors in his book, The New Rules of War. Sean, welcome to Here and Now.
It's great to be with you.
Well, and first of all, let's define our terms here. Explain what the difference between a mercenary and a military contractor is, or is there a difference?
Well, volumes of ink by experts have been spilt on this topic, but the bottom line is there's really not much of a difference. If you can be one, you can be the other, and it really comes down to labels.
And which countries are using them right now?
Well, the U.S. used them heavily in Iraq and Afghanistan. Right now, they're being used heavily by Russia and the UAE and Saudi Arabia.
And why?
There's a lot of reasons why people would hire mercenaries. One, the main reason is that they give you plausible deniability. So modern warfare is getting sneakier. It's not about who has more F-35s or aircraft carriers. It's about sneakiness. And so special forces, mercenaries, little green men, propaganda, this is what turns the tide of war now. And mercenaries are extremely good at giving plausible deniability.
And why do you want that?
Because we live in a global information age. And in a global information age, plausible deniability eclipses firepower. Look at how Russia took the Ukraine. And sort of the old ways of war, they would have marched in with tanks like they did in Hungary and Czechoslovakia during the Cold War. In the new way of war, they use these tools of plausible deniability to have a ghost occupation. So it's a fait accompli by the time the first tank shows up. And mercenaries, again, like the Wagner Group, which is a Russian mercenary group, they're being used everywhere in the Middle East and Africa now, not just Ukraine, and rumored to be in Venezuela too.
So they can just say, if something goes wrong, oh, well, that wasn't us. That was these other people. We have nothing to do with them.
That's right, even though the intelligence community has a pretty good idea it was them. But here's an example. I mean, first of all, mercenaries, we think of mercenaries as these like cartoonish villains from Hollywood. That's not who they are these days. They are pretty sophisticated. So in February of 2018, the Russian mercenary group, the Wagner Group, had 500 mercenaries go up against some of our best troops in aviation in eastern Syria. It was a secret battle. And our troops were Delta Force, Rangers, Green Berets, and they called in B-52s, F-15s, AC-130 gunships, Apache helicopters, drones, you name it, to fight off these 500 mercenaries. Now, they wiped out the mercenaries, but it took them 4 hours to do that. And the military is touting that as a big win, but it's really not. Because what happens if you're facing 5,000 mercenaries? It's not Delta Force. It's one of the National Guard units, as we had many in Iraq before. So mercenaries are pretty sophisticated and pretty lethal these days.
And are most of them like you, former Army people, came out of the official military and then decided to become a contractor afterwards?
Yeah, almost all of them are. So I spent several years in the industry, and I got out when I realized that there were no old people in my industry. Mm-hmm. The way that the mercenary world is organized, it's sort of an illicit economy, so it's organized around language groups. The big ones are Russian speakers, English speakers, and Spanish speakers. There's some others like French speakers too, but those are the three big ones, and they all come from usually some version of special forces or something like that, sometimes national police units or paramilitary units, but they all come from someplace. There's no organic basic training for mercenaries.
Now, let's talk about the United States. You've reported that during World War II, 10% of America's armed forces were contractors. That was up to 50% in Iraq and Afghanistan. What about today with the U.S. and contractors?
Yeah, so the U.S. has pulled out of Iraq and Afghanistan, but still there's a huge footprint of contractors. So in Afghanistan today, there's a 3-to-1 ratio of contractors to troops, But only a fraction of those are armed contractors. I mean, most contractors are just making food or repairing vehicles. But about 2,000 or 3,000 are armed or trigger pullers. And this is sort of what prompted or resurrected the mercenary trade, which is, let's face it, it's the second oldest profession. But it went underground for a couple hundred years, and now it's raging back to life.
And when we think about the negative headlines when it comes to the U.S. and contractors, employees of the private security firm Blackwater were convicted for civilian deaths in the Iraq War. What would you say are the biggest drawbacks of using mercenaries for any country?
Well, there's quite a few drawbacks. One, it's a way to circumvent democratic accountability of the armed forces because the White House doesn't really have to report them. It's a way also to lower the barriers of entry to war. So, if, for example, the reason we ended up with so many contractors in Iraq and Afghanistan is that the Iraq and Afghanistan wars were not short wars, contrary to the promises of Rumsfeld and other neocons. And we either had to sort of leave Iraq and Afghanistan and concede defeat. We'd have to have a Vietnam-like draft to fill an all-volunteer force that didn't want to volunteer. Or we use contractors. And so using contractors allows you to sort of go to war without having to have your own people bleed. And that creates problems.
They also probably change the nature of the conflict that they're fighting in just by being there.
That's right. So mercenaries commodify warfare and make it a market activity. So where supply and demand are now strategies that replace traditional ways of warfare. And when mercenaries come into a place like the Middle East or Africa, these are continents in conflict, profit motive demands that they start or elongate wars for profit. And a world awash in mercenaries is a world with more conflict and suffering.
Now, you worked as a mercenary until around 2007. You've said you got out of it after being asked to do morally questionable things. Do you think mercenaries are asked to do things that they shouldn't be?
They do, but and so are soldiers. I mean, I would like to make a distinction here. Well, first of all, it's amusing that people in the industry, they call themselves private military contractors, not mercenaries, but it's a bit of a euphemism. Mercenaries can make they have moral choices they can engage in. And when I was in the industry, there's all sorts of reasons why people would join the industry. Some do it for money, some do it for adventurism, some do it because they want to kill people, to be frank about it. But there are other reasons, too, they do it. They do it because they're curious. They do it because they're soldiers who come back and they don't want to be a UPS truck driver anymore. And they want to and they go back to places like Iraq to help the Peshmerga go after ISIS. I mean, there's all sorts of reasons why people do it. And at some of us find that there are moral litmus tests. And for me, it was time to get out when I was asked to question my loyalty essentially to the United States of America, and I was unwilling to do that.
When you look at the conflict now in northern Syria, and it has calmed down somewhat, but the idea that you have mercenaries doing the battle for various countries there, what do you think that means?
I think that Syria is a case study of modern warfare. Modern warfare is a form of shadow warfare. It's all under the table, and if you see it bubble up, then you know it's reached a crisis point. I think we have a lot of warriors in places like Syria now, Libya, the Congo, and we don't know who they represent. They're all masked, and we don't know who they fight for. And it's not just governments; they could fight for, you know, oil companies,
right,
or oligarchs, or even megachurches.
You don't think that they are doing that, or are you just making that as hypothetical?
It's a hypothetical, but based on some of my own background, I didn't always work for the U.S. government as a contractor. And I saw things in the field that the extractive industry, for example, even some NGOs are looking increasingly at private forces, mostly for defensive purposes, unlike the Wagner Group, which are offensive. But that has been a moving goalpost the last 20 years. And I believe – I would not be surprised if we saw, for example – a mega church or a movie star do a humanitarian intervention in a place like Syria or northern Iraq should ISIS 2.0, you know, rear its head again.
That is Sean McFate, who is a former Army officer and former private military contractor, author of The New Rules of War. Sean, thanks for joining us.
Thank you very much.